From NPR News, this is live coverage of the March 4th primaries. I'm Robert Siegel.
And I'm Melissa Block. It has been a big night for John McCain. The Arizona senator wraps up the Republican presidential nomination with victories in Vermont, Ohio, Texas, and Rhode Island.
On the Democratic side, Barack Obama wins in Vermont, but Hillary Clinton ends her losing streak with a victory in Rhode Island. It is a tight race in Texas and also in Ohio.
John McCain's triumph culminates a comeback in a race where just months ago his campaign was all but written off. McCain spoke with supporters tonight in Dallas, Texas.
Now we begin the most important part of our campaign, to make a respectful, determined, and convincing case to the American people that our campaign and my election as president, given the alternatives presented by our friends in the other party, are in the best interest of the country we love.
In the race between Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama, ballot counting is going slowly in Ohio, and the polls have been closed in Texas for just more than an hour. There are also caucuses going on there. NPR's Don Gagne is with the Obama campaign in San Antonio, Texas. And Don, I gather that Barack Obama has called Senator John McCain.
He made a phone call just about an hour and a half ago. And he congratulated Senator McCain about the about his clinching the nomination, said he has run a great race, and Senator Obama told him he looks forward to meeting him in the general election contest in the fall. McCain thanked him for the phone call. We're told it was very cordial, very courteous, and very brief.
Any news of phone calls between Senator Obama and Senator Clinton?
We have not heard of any phone calls directly between the two campaigns. But I have to tell you, Robert, about an hour ago, the Clinton campaign held a conference call. They sent out urgent emails to all of us. And on this conference call, they were complaining about what they called some irregularities in the caucuses here in Texas. They said in some precinct sites, Obama supporters had taken control and were preventing Clinton supporters from getting inside to caucus. And during that conference call, they went to questions, and the first question was from an Obama advisor and campaign staffer who started grilling them, saying, "This is the same thing you guys have said elsewhere, and it's never true." So the campaigns have been talking to one another, but not at the highest levels, let's say.
And we should add here that the caucuses, we don't know how they're going in Texas, and may not for a while yet this evening. But the caucuses have been really an arena in which the Obama campaign has excelled and done extremely well.
Exactly. Organizationally, they have really tuned into what it takes to do well in a caucus. And that's how they kicked off this campaign in Iowa with that unexpected and very large win there. So 2/3 of the delegates that are being awarded in Texas tonight are being divvied up proportionately based on the primary, which happened all day. But another third has been held in abeyance until they get these caucuses done, and they'll divide those up then.
Don, one last question about the Texas Democratic primary. From the exit polls that we've seen, according to what the pollsters found, there was a very large Hispanic share of voters in the Texas primary, 30%. And the share of African-American voters in the Democratic primary was down to, I think, about 19%. And it's going up from 25 in the one case and down from about 21 in the other case. Those numbers don't look good for Barack Obama. What do you hear from people there in the Obama campaign about them?
No, but both of those numbers are very good news for the Clinton campaign. The Obama campaign, though, is saying, look at the overall turnout. It is so huge. And they say that he deserves a lot of the credit for that. So if these numbers don't quite match up, particularly the African-American vote from 4 years ago when John Kerry was running on the Democratic ticket, they say it's not an apples-to-apples comparison.
Don Gagne, and I don't know who your accompaniment there is, thank you very much.
It's Curtis Mayfield.
It is. Well, pretty classy act. That's right. Don Gagne speaking to us from the Obama rally in San Antonio.
Let's see if David Green can top that. NPR's David Green in Columbus, Ohio, where the Clinton supporters are holding their rally. He's at the Columbus Athenaeum. David Green, who's the music where you are?
Well, it's the Dave Chesson Blues Band. How about that?
Okay.
And people are cheering for them. I have to say, this is a campaign that, you know, had lost 11 straight contests. They lost the 12th earlier tonight when we called Vermont for Barack Obama. This was a crowd that really wanted something to cheer about. It's a nasty day weather-wise in Ohio. They're cheering for the band. A few people even screamed when they described a cell phone that had gone missing, and they were looking for it in the arena here. And finally, they've been seeing, you know, some numbers they like going up on CNN, watching television. They've been letting out some cheers, and they're just hoping for good news tonight here in Ohio.
Well, they can cheer for the victory in Rhode Island. Hillary Clinton did win in Rhode Island, and waiting for the result in Ohio. Let's talk about some of these early numbers. David, what I'm seeing with about 30% of precincts in Ohio reporting Hillary Clinton ahead 56-41%. Again, really early numbers, and probably some of the places where Barack Obama would do well, areas around Cleveland, say, would not have reported yet.
Yeah, Hillary Clinton came into this race, it seems, very confidently over the last few days, looking at Ohio. She talked to us earlier today, and she pointed at Ohio as the important race of the day, saying this is a state that Democrats just absolutely need to win in the general election. And so it's an important test for two Democratic candidates for the nomination. So you got the feeling that she might not be saying things like that if she were feeling pessimistic about Ohio. But feeling good, but again, we'll have to see where things go the rest of the night.
And again, the message that Hillary Clinton was hammering home in Ohio was strongly about NAFTA, the economy, trade, jobs.
Yeah, it became almost two different races over the last few days, shuttling back and forth between Ohio and Texas. In Ohio, it was all about trade and the economy. She spent a lot of time down in Appalachia, some of the less populated areas of rural Ohio, but places where there are a lot of working-class white voters who are part of her base. She hammered home the idea that she would help bring universal health care to the country, help people get their jobs back, help with trade, end NAFTA. So that message really focused. And then when she went down to Texas, that message in many ways disappeared from her stump speech. So very targeted at Ohio voters, really punching that economy message.
And briefly, David, what's Hillary Clinton's plan after tonight? Where does she go?
That's the big question. She's planning on going to Washington, D.C. That's where her campaign headquarters is, presumably to hold some meetings with her staff. You know, she has said that this is a long campaign. She plans to keep going, but when she's asked specifically, you know, would you consider dropping out if things don't go well tonight, she just kind of stops the conversation there and says, we're not speculating. Let's let the voters of Ohio and Texas speak today.
Okay, NPR's David Green in Columbus, Ohio. David, I think that blues band is either on break or they're very quiet. I don't know what's going on back there.
I just stepped out. I'm going to head back in and listen to some music.
Okay, NPR's David Green in Columbus.
You know, Melissa, we have a problem of protocol here right now. This evening, John McCain put away the Republican nomination, so it was very obvious Mike Huckabee, who lost,
dropped out,
and then Senator McCain spoke. When you have a multiple primary evening for the Democrats
and a caucus,
one has won in one state, Vermont, one has won in the other state.
Both tiny states.
Both very small. Two big states, closely contested. One of the questions will be, who goes first? Who speaks first? Does that mean you're implying by that you came in second today, as both of them are trying to claim that they've done very well?
And we saw them get all tangled up, if you remember, on the night of the Potomac primaries when Hillary Clinton was speaking and Barack Obama started right when she was talking.
Ended up speaking at the same time. Well, over to the undisputed result on the Republican side. NPR's Scott Horsley is at the Regency Ballroom in the Fairmont Dallas Hotel in Dallas. John McCain's campaign is headquartered there tonight, and that's where Senator McCain earlier addressed his supporters. And notably, Scott, he began by talking about the war in Iraq and the fight against terrorism.
That's right, Robert. And it was interesting. He said on the one hand that he would defend the decision to go to war to unseat Saddam Hussein, but he also said that the next president doesn't have a choice to revisit that issue. And so what really counts now is where you go from here. And the choice confronting the president and the American people is who has the plan to end the war in Iraq. And, of course, John McCain says he's got the plan to end it in victory.
He will be hearing, no doubt, from his Democratic opponent, whether that's Senator Obama or Senator Clinton, that he once said he really didn't know much about economics. That's not his field. What did he say about the economy in his speech to his supporters tonight?
He again tonight, as he has done for several days now, criticized the Democrats for their attacks on NAFTA. John McCain has proclaimed himself a strong free trader. In fact, he's not only stood up for NAFTA, but he's urged the Congress to pass the Colombian Free Trade Agreement, a deal that both Senators Obama and Clinton oppose. And he also criticized their plan on health care and said that he has the plan that will make health care affordable and accessible without reverting to what he called the 60s and 70s style mandates.
So free trade, traditional Republican position, and then his plan is reduce health care costs and have insurance companies compete across state lines, that sort of thing.
His health care plan is very much like the plan put forward by President Bush. It's a very market-driven plan, consumer-oriented, and also, I think, still very consistent with conservative Republican principles.
Was that crowd in Dallas very enthusiastic about Senator McCain?
They were. They're still here, in fact, popping some of the red, white, and blue balloons that just fell from the ceiling here a little while ago. But, of course, as you say, this was not a one-state a day or night for Senator McCain. He was competing in four states, and it was Texas, though, that put him over the top. And when the announcement came in just after 8 o'clock local time that he had won Texas and won the delegates that secured him the nomination, there was a huge cheer from the crowd here in the ballroom.
Well, thanks, Scott, and maybe you can get a rest now for a few weeks. It's good to talk with you. That's it.
Thanks very much. No rest for Senator McCain, though. He heads to Washington tomorrow to meet with President Bush.
But I think we'll cover him with our correspondents here, don't you think? Scott Horsley is speaking to us from McCain headquarters in Dallas.
And now to NPR's national political correspondent, Mara Liasson. And Mara, just looking at these results coming in, if you look at the small states, Rhode Island and Vermont, I mean, Hillary Clinton won handily in Rhode Island, as handily as Barack Obama did in Vermont. It seems by about the same margin. And then these big questions about Ohio and Texas.
Yeah, well, Vermont and Rhode Island, the two small states really fit the profiles of the candidate. I mean, Vermont is about as an Obama state as you can get. And Rhode Island is a traditional working class Democratic Catholic state. And she was expected to win there, and she did, and he was expected to win in Vermont. And Ohio and Texas, we're just waiting and waiting and waiting to see what's happening. Very, very close in Texas so far. They're running neck and neck with, you know, not very much of the vote counted. And then in Ohio, she is way ahead, but the areas that we haven't heard from yet, of course, are the big urban areas where we expect him to do pretty well.
And a lot of massaging going to be coming out, no matter which way this result comes out tonight. Both camps obviously going to be interpreting this in a way that works to their favor. What's going to happen here?
Well, they will be if the result is mixed. In other words, if she doesn't lose to or win to, even if she does win to, if she doesn't really get a lot of delegates out of that victory, I think you're going to hear the Obama campaign say what they've been saying all along. This is a delegate count. At some point, the math matters, and she's going to just run out of field.
And a fight for the superdelegates. Okay, NPR national political correspondent Mara Liasson, thanks so much. You're listening to live coverage of the March 4th primaries from NPR News. From NPR News, this is live coverage of the March 4th primaries. I'm Melissa Block.
And I'm Robert Siegel. Linda Wertheimer is in Ohio, in Akron to be specific, and to be even more specific, she's at the Brico Bar, headquarters for the Summit County Democratic Party. Are the people still there, Linda?
People are still arriving. We left for a while and went over to the Hillary Clinton party, which is at a nearby saloon, and then we came back. It's an interesting thing. They've got some local races here in Akron, so some of those local people are celebrating here, but there was a huge cheer at the Hillary Clinton party when Rhode Island was announced, and now they're waiting, as we all are, to see what happens, particularly with Cuyahoga County.
And now we should explain that Cuyahoga County, Cleveland, has big-time voting problems today, and there were, I think some voting places were still open for a while, weren't they?
That's right. They held the polling places open late. They're having a great deal of difficulty rounding up all of the ballots because there's such terrible weather here. And as it gets, as the night gets later and the temperature drops, the streets are getting icier and icier. So this is a serious weather problem, which may cause some delays as well. Not to mention that Cuyahoga County just has traditional problems counting its votes. Here in Akron, which is Summit County, they're expecting Hillary Clinton to carry this area. But, of course, it's not clear what that's going to be until all the rest of the states add it on.
But and of course, these answers are always anecdotal. But do you get any sense that the weather was so bad in Akron that it actually depressed turnout on the part of groups that might be counted on as Hillary Clinton voters?
The Hillary Clinton voters here are union people, older women especially. There are a tremendous number of AFSCME people that have been organizing around the state. They've been trucking people to the polling places. And I think they have a fairly highly organized effort to get their voters out. And I saw the same thing that I heard your reporter from the Plain Dealer say. I saw people on crutches going into the polling places at senior centers. So they're making a huge effort here. But I cannot see how it would be possible that this weather would encourage turnout. If I didn't have to be here, I can tell you, I would be snuggled up by a fire somewhere.
Linda Wertheimer are bar hopping in Akron tonight.
Robert, I just wanted to mention to you that this is the home of the Firestone Country Club.
Ah,
I think you've heard of.
Yes, a very important place in the world of golf. And there are many such places in the state of Ohio, we should say, in Dublin
Absolutely.
As well. Linda, thanks a lot, and enjoy the party.
Thank you.
That's NPR's Linda Wertheimer in Akron, Ohio, at Brico Bar. Melissa?
And we're going to go now to Dallas and to NPR's Wade Goodwin. Wade, you were at a caucus site earlier tonight there, I know, in Dallas. And now accusations coming from the Clinton campaign about what the Obama campaign was up to at these caucuses. Tell us about that.
Well, this is about getting the packet. The packet is simply the packet of instructions about how to run the caucus. And whoever gets the packet runs the caucus. And it doesn't mean that if the Clinton people get the packet, they get to interpret the instructions their way, or if the Obama people get the instruction packet for the caucus, they get to interpret the instructions their way. It's simply the instructions, and there's a judge overseeing the votes and counting the votes at the caucuses. So I have to say, I was talking to Democratic officials yesterday about this. They were about to pull all their hair out because they were frustrated with both campaigns, I think, and maybe a bit more with the Clinton campaign about the issue of who gets to control the packet. And I think the Clinton people are saying that whoever gets the packet controls the caucus, but controlling the caucus just means you stand up there and you say, okay, next we're going to do resolutions. Okay, next we're going to elect alternate delegates. So that's what the issue is. It's about who got the caucus packets, and the Clinton people are saying that the Obama campaign got the caucus packets without a vote.
Okay.
You're supposed to elect a caucus chairman.
Okay. Now, those caucuses are responsible for about, I think, a third of the delegates in Texas, 193 delegates total, a third of them in the caucuses, two-thirds coming from the primaries. I want to talk to you about turnout. We were hearing a lot about turnout in early voting. I think you had about 10 days there in Texas to go to the polls before today. What were you hearing about turnout both in Dallas and around the state?
The turnout is historic. This is general election numbers for a primary turnout. We're expected to go approach 3.5 million voters in Texas for this primary. So there were 2 million voters just in the week during the early voting. We don't have the final numbers tonight, but when I checked around Dallas today and everywhere I checked in with, they said turnout has been heavy.
There's been some question we heard earlier tonight from Republican strategist Mark McKinnon, who works with the McCain campaign, that he says Texas is a lock in November for the Republicans. What are you hearing from Democrats? Do they think they have a reasonable chance that they could put Texas in their column in November?
I think for the first time in I don't know how long, 20 years, there's now talk that maybe, you know, the Democrats could try for Texas. I mean, unless the party, the national party, decides to try for Texas, Texas is out of it, and we haven't had that. But now there's talk about, let's see if we can convince the Democratic Party to try for Texas, and I think, you know, tonight's results will go a long way toward for the national party deciding, you know, is Texas in play or is Texas not in play.
And last time the Democrats took Texas was 1976. They'd have to go back 32 years.
Thank you very much.
Okay, NPR's Wade Goodwin in Dallas. Thanks so much.
My pleasure.
Joining us now from his home in Cincinnati is Rob Portman, former Republican congressman from Cincinnati, also a former U.S. trade representative. Former, I could go on with all the things you've been, Robert, for quite a while. You are a McCain supporter, and you now have, it looks like you now have a nominee. He's over the top. In Ohio, lots of people are very concerned about the economy. The Republican Party imploded 2 years ago in statewide races. Can you win Ohio in November?
I think so, Robert. You're right about the economy. 62% of Ohio voters said recently that they thought the economy and jobs was the top issue. Incidentally, that's not so different than what it was in 2004, although the campaigns focused a lot on terrorism and Iraq. The voters really focused on the economy in 2004 and 2006, so things are not actually as different as they might appear. On the economy and jobs issue, I think John McCain has a strong message. As you know, he's been opposing higher taxes and instead actually saying we ought to have lower taxes for companies to make them more competitive in the global marketplace. He talked about that a little tonight in his speech. And, you know, that I think is going to resonate with a lot of Ohioans. People are concerned about the manufacturing base in Ohio, and he has spoken very directly to that in terms of worker retraining. He talked about that again tonight.
But he's very much pro-trade, which is a very traditional Republican position, I guess. And as a former U.S. trade representative, you heard what the debate was in Ohio. What's the guidance to Senator McCain to carry Ohio, which I gather Republicans must do to win? How does he address the trade agreements, which so many Ohioans resent as a drain on their jobs?
Well, as I said a moment ago, I didn't mention trade, actually. I was talking about taxes and worker retraining. But that is part of the answer to the trade issue, is to make Ohio jobs more competitive by giving people the ability to compete. And, you know, part of our problem in Ohio, as you know, is people are being displaced not just by trade, but by productivity and efficiency. In fact, every analysis will tell you that that's by far the majority of the reduction in manufacturing jobs. Same is true, by the way, in Michigan and many other states, in fact, around the world. And the question is, how do you retrain those folks, whether their jobs have been lost due to some international trade issue or, more likely, due to the fact that manufacturers are doing more, producing more with fewer and fewer people? It continues to happen. And that's where I think he has an interesting answer that perhaps Republicans in the past have not focused as much on, which is how to retrain people and have lifetime training to respond to the global economic challenges that we face. And I think that will resonate well. Also, health care. He has a proposal, as you know, on health care that focuses on getting at the cost issue, which is really the key issue for small businesses in Ohio, which are the places where most of our uninsured are. And then finally, energy. You talked about that tonight, as you heard, and the need for us to get away from our dependency on foreign oil, specifically because of the unpredictability of cost, and the higher prices are affecting the entire economy in Ohio and around our country.
Just one very quick question. Do you assume Ohio, if the Republicans win it, it's going to be close no matter what happens?
Yes, I do. I think Ohio is a classic swing state, Robert. And I look back over the years, you know, Bill Clinton did win it twice. George Bush won it twice. But Bill Clinton ran as more of a moderate Democrat, certainly more to the middle than Senator Clinton is running currently, or Senator Obama. And that's probably where Ohio is. It's a swing state, but it's a state that is a little right of center in terms of fiscal conservatism, where Senator McCain is strong. And if you look at what happened in 2006, independent voters shifted pretty dramatically away from Republicans to Democrats. But the main reason, based on the exit polling, was because they thought Republicans were not being fiscally conservative enough.
All right. Well, we'll see what happens over the coming months. Rob Portman, thanks a lot for talking to us. Rob Portman, former U.S. Trade Representative, speaking to us from Cincinnati, former congressman as well.
And we're going to go now to Congresswoman from Ohio, Marcy Kaptur, who represents Ohio's 9th District. That includes many of the counties along Lake Erie, and she joins us from Washington, D.C. Congresswoman Kaptur, thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Melissa. Good evening.
Good evening. And you are, of course, a superdelegate. You have not endorsed a candidate. Is that right?
No, none of our delegation has, but for one. Our effort is to focus more attention on the economy and the proposals of the candidates for stopping the hemorrhage of jobs and these rising mortgage foreclosures, just as a two key issues important to our voters.
We should recap here and say that we have not projected a winner in the Ohio race. It's considered too close to call, and a lot of precincts have not yet reported, including, I assume, a lot of the precincts in your district. We can say that about 40% of the precincts are reported so far, and the vote right now shows Hillary Clinton with a substantial lead over Barack Obama. I assume, and I assume you assume, that that lead will tighten over the evening. Was that true?
Yes, because the urban counties haven't reported. The cities and the votes are still coming in. Some of the voting was delayed till after 9 o'clock, so we expect it'll, you know, those will trickle in, and I don't know what's going to happen in the Cleveland area. None of those were actually posted.
We heard Linda Wertheimer talking about a pretty substantial turnout despite some really lousy weather in Ohio. Is that what you're hearing, too?
Yes, and in our corner of the state, we think it's between 45 and 50%. I think the highest number I've seen is 48% thus far, so it's hovering toward 50. That's a really good turnout.
You heard Rob Portman just there talking about prospects for November in your state, in Ohio. How do you see the race shaping up in November, and how close might it be?
I think that Ohio is a bellwether state. As Ohio goes, so goes the nation. With unemployment inching up in Ohio above the national average and more jobs being shipped out everywhere else but Ohio, most Ohioans are saying we're headed in the wrong direction. Our jobs are headed in the wrong direction. And rescuing our economy is on every voter's mind. I think that's really going to be the make-or-break issue come November, and I think candidates are going to have to be very forthcoming.
You know, we heard a representative from the Obama campaign earlier tonight talking about this now becoming essentially a primary for superdelegates as both campaigns try to win you and your fellow superdelegates over. When do you consider it appropriate for you to weigh in and endorse a candidate and come out in favor of somebody?
Well, I hope that we from our region, which has suffered such job losses, and, you know, I heard what Mr. Portman said about trade and the economy. We are facing terrible trade deficits, so the solutions that he claims created a wonderful economy really haven't worked. We've lost over 200,000 more manufacturing jobs just in this decade, and our unemployment rate is skyrocketing. The value of the dollar is plummeting. Gas prices are rising. I mean, this isn't exactly a good omen here. So I think NAFTA, CAFTA, PNTR, all these trade agreements that cared more about sending our jobs somewhere else than creating them in our state will be a very important set of questions as we move toward the November election. And we're interested in electing someone in our state who will hold investment accountable. If we have new technology through new patents being developed and we help on that, our people invest and so forth, we hope those jobs will be created in our country, not shipped to China.
And do you endorse somebody before the convention? That's my question.
Well, it depends on how it goes here. We'll see. I hope that our superdelegates will be able to be a strong voice for Ohio and the industrial Midwest interests.
Okay. Congresswoman Marcy Kaptur, representing the 9th District of Ohio. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
And again, updating, Melissa, more than a third of the votes, or the polling places at least, have reported in Ohio, and still lots of cities yet to report. But at this point, Senator Clinton enjoys a considerable, more than 100,000 vote lead, 57% to 41%. But as Congressman Kaptur just said, we don't expect that to hold up.
And a lot closer in Texas.
A lot closer. About a fifth of the vote has been counted, and it's extremely close between Senator Obama, who I think has a very narrow lead still, and Senator Clinton. And the vote tally there reflects a lot of early votes that were cast and that were reported before the votes cast today have been counted. Andrew Kohut, director of the Pew Research Center for the People and the Press, has been poring over the exit polls. I heard earlier this evening, I heard from David Wilhelm, the old Clinton campaign manager who's working for Obama now, that the burden was on Hillary Clinton to break out with a new, it was up to her to break out with some new line in this, to change the dynamic of the election. You've looked at the polls. Has the dynamic of this Democratic primary contest changed today?
Well, there's one thing that jumps out of this poll, Robert, and that is how much she has created a unidimensional personal image. Now, what I mean by that is of the 28% of the people in Texas who said they were looking for the candidate with the right experience, all of them, 91%, voted for Hillary Clinton. If you said something else in Texas in these exit polls, you wanted a candidate for change or the best chance to win, you voted for Obama. She got all of the votes of people who were looking for one thing. She's focused her strong point as experience in an overwhelming sense. We didn't see number. We saw that tendency in earlier in earlier primaries, but nothing like this. And we saw a similar. We see a similar thing in Ohio, and that's one of the things. If she succeeds in Ohio and Texas, it's because she's really made her not an old appeal. Not a new appeal, an old appeal, work much more effectively.
Do you think it means I was first lady for 8 years? Is that what experience means?
I think it means a lot of the things that she's been pushing day one and all of that. And I think it also means that people are listening to the attacks that she's making on Obama. 52% of the people in Texas said that she had attacked him unfairly. Only 36% of the people said that about Obama in Texas. So she's seen as being more aggressive, and presumably that's not a good thing, but it's working.
Okay. Ron Elving, let's bring you in here, too. And NPR's Washington editor, Ron Elving. Do you see things the way Andy's talking about here, that these things paid off for Clinton in the end in this last stretch toward this voting day?
Yes, I think it's quite clear from the exit polls that people making up their minds in the last several days tended to her. I think that while she may pay a price down the road for having gone negative, and we saw this in Wisconsin earlier, for the moment, in these two states, it seems to have been just what she needed to put herself slightly over the top. Now, it may not be a smashing victory for her in either state. If she does win in one or the other or both, it'll probably be fairly narrow. But when people say they believe she's the more experienced candidate, that is not necessarily an endorsement of her experience as much as it is an indictment of his lack of experience. So that's where she's really scoring with this negative. It's not by saying, look at all the experience I have. She has never actually been an executive. She was not, of course, the president. She hasn't been in the Senate that much longer than he has. But she does have the claim that she's been around in Washington while he has not, and he is distinctly inexperienced in these areas.
And that's certainly what that ad was playing up on, the phone call in the middle of the night. And who do you want answering that phone at the White House?
Just like when that ad first ran back in 1984 in the hands of Walter Mondale, who was using the red phone ad, who do you want, who do you trust? And he was contrasting his experience with that of another relatively inexperienced Senator Gary Hart.
Isn't it remarkable when you compare this Democratic primary race to some really tough races of the past? There's no big issue that divides these. There's no position that is dramatically different between these two candidates. So it's all about the virtues, the qualities of each to become president.
It's sometimes almost comical to listen to them become exercised and lathered about the very small differences between their health care plans, relatively speaking.
Ron Elving, NPR's Washington editor. You're listening to live coverage of the March 4th primaries from NPR News. From NPR News, this is live coverage of the March 4th primaries. I'm Robert Siegel.
And I'm Melissa Block. And there were four states voting today, two big ones, Texas and Ohio, and the Democratic races there still too close to call. Two small states, Vermont and Rhode Island, and there are winners in each. Split decision for Barack Obama won in Vermont and Hillary Clinton won in Rhode Island. And we're going to talk about those small races now before we talk about the big ones. We're going to go first to John Dillon with Vermont Public Radio in Vermont. And John, where are you now? Earlier you were at an Obama event. Are you still there?
No, I'm back at the studio.
And tell us what's going on. Obviously, it was a big night for Barack Obama there in Vermont.
Yeah, and I think the party died down fairly quickly because the results were apparent so early. They had a brief burst of celebration, and then it seemed like everybody went home and the reporters had to go file. But it was a pretty substantial win, as you know, for Barack Obama in Vermont.
And not a surprise. He was expected to do very well there. So no, a little anticlimactic.
Yeah, it tracked the polls pretty well. It's interesting because people here are talking about back in 2006 when Obama made a speech at the University of Vermont, and apparently there were lines out the door and down the street. And people that I ran into remembered that appearance. This was before he'd officially announced he was up here campaigning for some Vermont Democrats. And I think that really galvanized people early on for Barack Obama.
John, can you tell, given what you know about how the vote turned out tonight, with 15 pledged delegates at stake in Vermont, who got how many?
We won't really know for sure. It probably will mean 9 or 10 for Obama. Once it's all counted up, there's a bonus that Obama could get if he gets over 70%, which he's not. So it will be proportional, and he'll get, you know, roughly 2/3.
The main voting issue, as far as you could tell, John, there in Vermont, I mean, if in Ohio it was all about the economy, and to some extent in Texas as well, what about in Vermont? What do voters care about there?
Well, we don't have a rust belt to move to China, and we didn't have a housing bubble to burst. So the issue here has been and is the war. Vermont has lost more people to the war in Iraq and Afghanistan than any other state per capita. And that's been just uppermost in people's minds that I've talked to. It's been the war. And they've appreciated, I think, Senator Obama's opposition to that. So that I think, propelled them to his campaign.
Okay. Thanks a lot, John.
You're welcome.
That's John Dillon with Vermont Public Radio.
And from the New England state where Senator Obama won today to the New England state where Senator Clinton won today, Rhode Island, and Mark Patinkin, columnist for the Providence Journal. Mark Patinkin, it looks like it's a pretty decisive win for Hillary Clinton in Rhode Island.
Yeah, surprisingly decisive. She had this kind of spread a few weeks ago, and it looked like she had, which is to say 18-20%, she had closed it down to 7 or 8%, but right now it's with majority of the votes in, it's holding at 18% victory for Hillary. Surprisingly strong finish here at a time when we thought things were closing.
Does that mean that, does it translate into a net gain of delegates for her that would cancel out, say, the 3 to 5 delegate net gain that Barack Obama will get in Vermont?
It may be slightly more here. There's 21 at play in the actual voting here in Rhode Island, and it is distributed according to percentages. Still, that would probably only mean an extra 5 or 6 for her, but enough to maybe give her a slight edge in New England. It's a good win, though.
It was in Rhode Island that Hillary Clinton made her speech with the, I would say, sarcastic remark about Barack Obama speaks and celestial choirs open up and change suddenly occurs from the heavens. Did those attacks on Barack Obama, as somebody in her depiction, was inexperienced and naive about the world, did they pay off?
Well, those were made here. That's good that you noted that, and that got a lot of play. I think the factors in Rhode Island, though, weren't directly related to that. She did not have a big crowd in Rhode Island. She only had 2,000 people. He had 10 or 12,000 when he came here at the same space about a week later. And so I think it points out what some others have observed, and that's that his that Obama's very energetic younger supporters were, at least here, outnumbered by perhaps the quieter older supporters that did not go to rallies but did go to vote today.
I just wanted you to remark on the role of one unusual player in the Rhode Island Democratic primary. That's Lincoln Chafee, who, till a couple of years ago, was the Republican, a really maverick Republican senator from Rhode Island.
Yes, he was the only Republican U.S. senator to vote against the war early on, and he has thrown his support behind Obama. He did not win for re-election here, partly because Rhode Island did want to return a Democratic Congress. They're a very Democratic state, a Democratic Senate majority.
Lost to Sheldon Whitehouse in the
election. He did lose to Sheldon Whitehouse, who is a Hillary superdelegate here. Patrick Kennedy, on the other hand, is a Obama superdelegate, the son of Ted Kennedy of Massachusetts. Patrick Kennedy is a congressman here in Rhode Island, but that didn't move the dial that much either. But there are just some very interesting basic demographics in Rhode Island that did, I think, turn it towards Hillary. That's it's an older, working-class state. 57% of voters who voted today, according to exit polls, were women, and 2/3 of them went for Clinton. It's also the most Catholic state in the nation, and mm-hmm. Catholics have tended to go toward Hillary Clinton, in part because the majority of mm-hmm. Catholics are women, at least voting Catholics. And also, surprisingly, independents here
went for Clinton.
They went for Clinton.
Right. Well, Mark Patinkin, thanks. And we'll see if it's rare for Rhode Island to be in the spotlight this deep in the presidential primary season. Hope you've enjoyed it.
First time in 30 years.
And Mark Patinkin, columnist for the Providence Journal.
And for some political analysis now, we're joined by columnist E.J. Dionne of The Washington Post and Matthew Continetti with The Weekly Standard. Thanks both to you both for coming back.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And Matt, we don't have a big interactive touchscreen map here, but you've got some doodles scribbled on pieces of paper in front of you. Tiny little doodles.
You noticed my maps.
You could have called it a hologram,
the
you know.
States, I know. Exactly.
What's your trenchant analysis based on this doodle?
Well, I will say this, though. Looking at some of the county results that are coming over, the New York Times has a great website that goes by county. And some of the big counties, the urban counties in both Ohio and Texas that you would expect would go for Obama in big numbers, those results have not really come in yet. We're still waiting for those. I don't think they're going to help Obama that much in Ohio. It looks like Clinton will win Ohio. At least that's my prediction. But in Texas, that may prove the difference. Places like Harris County, Travis County, and Dallas County in Texas, where Obama probably will win by big numbers. I also got one statistic. I went on the census, and I looked at the demographics of Pennsylvania, sure to be the next big contest here. Only 4.2% of the population in Pennsylvania is Latino. So here you have about 10% African American. So then you're going to have a really interesting demographic fight in Pennsylvania.
Pennsylvania, a long way away, EJ, not till April 22nd. It seems like an eternity. In between, there's Wyoming and Mississippi, but this could stretch on for a long time.
It's, you know, if the result tonight is that Hillary Clinton manages to win the primaries in both Texas and Ohio, then tonight is a really good night for John McCain in two respects. Mm-hmm. One, he clinched the nomination. Two, he guarantees this long battle. You had a very interesting example tonight of how bitter this is going to get. There was a conference call earlier this evening with the Clinton campaign where they were charging irregularities in some of the caucuses in Texas, which happened after the voting. Clearly, they suspect they're going to lose the caucuses. They're trying to discredit them. In the middle of the conference call, Bob Bauer, the Obama campaign's top lawyer, broke in to start arguing with the Clinton people on their own conference
call.
Yes, stop attacking the caucus process. That's what it's going to be like all year. And yet, as Robert pointed out earlier, there is no big issue difference here. You've got all this bitterness without issue differences. I looked at voting by ideology in Ohio. The liberals split dead even, basically, between Obama and Clinton. She had a very slight advantage among moderates. He had a slight advantage among conservatives. Ideology has absolutely nothing to do with this contest. And maybe sometimes when big principles aren't at stake, the campaign can actually be even more bitter than when you have at least you're arguing about a principle.
Okay. Thanks to you both. E.J. Dionne of The Washington Post, Matthew Continetti of The Weekly Standard.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And joining us now is Senator Claire McCaskill, Democrat of Missouri and supporter of Senator Barack Obama. She joins us from Washington, D.C. Senator McCaskill, the Obama campaign has been arguing for the past week that his nomination is inevitable. Let's get on with it already. If he loses either Ohio or Texas, can he still make that argument?
Well, I think he can. I think that what the Obama campaign has done from the beginning, at his insistence, is campaign in every state and count delegates and respect the process. And if you look at the math, this isn't about having your head in the clouds or just giving a good speech. The math is very much in Barack Obama's favor in terms of the delegate count. And when it comes down to it, you can only get the nomination one of two ways. You have to win the most delegates, which it appears he will do in this primary process, unless something unexpected happens in the next 8 weeks, which I don't know what it would be that would cause her to win by huge margins. The other way would be if the superdelegates decided to reverse what had happened in the primary process. And our Democratic Party has done some dumb things through the years. I don't think we would do something that dumb. I think that would be a really difficult thing for us to manage the emotional narrative going into November.
But you know the Clinton campaign's response to that. That doesn't mean you're saying that Senator Kennedy, Senator Kerry, and Governor Deval Patrick in Massachusetts are wrong to be supporting Senator Obama. He lost in Massachusetts.
I would certainly recommend that if we get to the point that we finish the primary process and Senator Obama is ahead in the delegates that have been selected by the Democrats in this country, I would recommend that all of the superdelegates vote with their states. And respect what their home states or home districts did. If we did that, then everything would be in sync. But what is not likely to happen is to have the majority of the superdelegates left out there going en masse to a candidate who who had not won the majority of the delegates through the primary process.
Who's going to referee that process? Who's going to try to deliver some kind of coherence to the behavior of superdelegates? Or, for that matter, the deal on Florida and Michigan?
I think there's going to be a lot of people that are going to begin to speak out. If the Clinton campaign continues to do the really negative campaigning they've done over the last several weeks, it takes a lot of discipline for, and I admire Barack Obama for it, and this is another thing he's insisted upon, is that his campaign not run negative ads, not run an ad that you couldn't guess who made it, whether it was the Republican Party or whether it was another Democrat. You know, he's not doing that, and he hasn't done that, and I think there's going to be pressure brought to bear mm-hmm. about the type of campaigning we do. And the other thing that's going to happen is a lot of people who haven't committed, I think, will begin to bring pressure about us uniting sooner rather than later in order to do what we need to do to make sure we have real change in the White House.
Senator McCaskill, thanks a lot for talking
to us. Thank you all for having me.
Claire McCaskill, Democrat of Missouri, and obviously, as you've heard, a supporter of Senator Barack Obama.
And we're going to turn now to NPR Washington editor Ron Elving for some more analysis. And Ron, let me have you talk first about what Senator McCaskill was saying there about the tone of the campaign to come and pressure to unite behind a candidate sooner rather than later. What do you think?
That's going to be a tough sell to a lot of Clinton supporters. If we posit at the moment here that she does hold on and win in Ohio, that she does win at least narrowly in the primary portion of the Texas vote, she's going to say, here are two more top 10 populist states that have gone for me. And that's been true in others like New York and California. It's probably going to be true in Pennsylvania, she will say, in April. So I have as legitimate a claim on this nomination as anyone else, and I have to show how concerned I am about toughening up, if you will, and testing this rival candidate of mine, Barack Obama, who maybe has a glass jaw, maybe can't take a punch, and surely will need to when it comes to this summer and fall against the Republicans.
With the general election against John McCain, who, as we have reported throughout the evening, clinched the nomination tonight. We should repeat that here. Ron, do you see the tone of this campaign changing? Do you see that it becomes more negative, since this seems to have worked for Hillary Clinton in the last few days, as she has pulled at least even, if not winning, in Texas and Ohio?
Imagine the group around the table talking about what's happened over the last month, 12 primaries in a row that they lost, then tonight some wins, perhaps some big wins, some meaningful wins, yet still a delegate deficit that's going to be extraordinarily hard to overcome. What strategy are they going to adopt? The strategy they had been following before the past week, or the much tougher, much more negative, much more attacking strategy of the last 5-6 days?
Hmm. Robert?
Joining us by phone right now from Ohio is Sherrod Brown, Democratic U.S. Senator from the state of Ohio. Superdelegate, and you haven't backed anyone yet, Senator.
I still have not, Robert.
All right. Well, you've seen your state vote. It's very close. Senator Clinton appears to be leading. What have you seen in Ohio that might guide your decision?
Well, what I've seen is good news. The last 2 or 3 weeks, the fact this primary is still going on has been good for Ohio, and I think good for the country, because we've seen the two Democratic candidates run pretty similar races, talking about a very populist progressive message on trade and manufacturing and really addressing the issues of middle class and working families in Ohio. And that, I think, carries them through the general election nationally.
As far as you're concerned, what you heard on trade, and that was a very important issue for you winning the Senate seat 2 years ago, were both Senator Obama and Senator Clinton satisfactory to you in what they said about trade agreements?
Yeah, I'm a bit concerned, although it's mostly much ado about nothing, the Canadian memo issue. But I absolutely was thrilled to hear them in Cleveland at the debate say they will renegotiate NAFTA. And that's much bigger than that, because it's not just NAFTA that Ohioans talk about, but NAFTA is very real, and it's symbolic of the larger trade issue. Our trade deficit with China has gone from, in 15 years, from barely double digits to a quarter of $1 trillion. And that connotes job loss. It causes more stagnation of wages. It's a issue of unsafe toys and contaminated food and vitamins, all of those things. And we clearly need a different direction in trade, which Hillary and Barack bring, contrasted with John McCain, in essence, running for a third Bush term, especially on trade policy.
Now, we heard earlier from Rob Portman, former Ohio congressman, Republican, saying that Ohioans are much more centrist than that. Bill Clinton won it by being more centrist. Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama are both running to the left of him on trade, for example.
I don't think that voters see left and right. I think my 2006 race that you and I have talked about, Robert, before, said that it's not a question of left and right, and I don't know what left and right especially mean on trade issues, but on a whole host of issues. The fact is that voters overwhelmingly want a different trade policy, and in the conversations tonight I've listened to, when Republicans talk, it really does sound like George Bush's third term. They want to continue the trade policies, continue the tax cuts for the rich at the expense of the middle class, continue the Iraq war at $3 billion a week,
right,
and how that saps in our ability to build infrastructure in Dayton and Steubenville and Chillicothe.
Sherrod Brown, thanks for talking with us once again.
Thank you, Robert.
That's Democratic Senator Sherrod Brown of Ohio.
And we're going to give the last word this hour to NPR's national political correspondent Mara Liasson. And Mara, at this hour, as we leave the results tonight, a bit of a muddle. We have Hillary Clinton winning in Rhode Island, Barack Obama winning in Vermont, very close race in Texas, Ohio, Hillary Clinton ahead, but who knows how that'll turn out.
Yeah, I think that tonight is a night that Hillary Clinton is going to say that she stopped his momentum. She stopped him maybe at 12. We don't know what the final results will be. But I think that all this week, the Clinton camp has been saying they feel the momentum changing. They think the attacks on Barack Obama have been working. And I think that no matter what happens tonight, she's going to claim it as a big night for her. This race is not over, and we have to see what Democrats think about that.
And Hillary Clinton expected to talk to her supporters in Ohio very shortly, and we'll bring you some of that speech when she appears there. Would imply, Ron, if she's talking to her supporters, that Hillary Clinton says she has won Ohio?
Some of the networks, some of the news organizations have begun to project a win for Hillary Clinton in Ohio. National Public Radio has not yet called that race, but she is clearly leading.
And she seems to be thinking she has some sort of victory speech to make there, which
she
is why she's coming out to address her supporters. Robert?
Yes.
And in Texas, where the caucuses, we think, are still underway, perhaps, it's still too close to call in the primary for everybody. So, a fascinating night on the Republican side. John McCain has won his party's nomination. You're listening to live coverage of the March 4th primaries from NPR News.